Apparently that's the only swearing in individual, isn't it? And I called, you know, and said, can I bring to it? And now we actually, they have, they invite everybody, they invite the entire
group. Happy New Year.
Organization meeting of the Hudson County Council for the year 2019 now in session. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Here.
Kariga?
Here.
Halloran?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Lewis?
Here.
Moranti?
Here.
Pisan?
Here.
Rosenthal?
Here.
Sarar?
Here.
Bolo?
Here.
President DiPietro?
Here.
Quorum present.
I'd like to begin by making a brief statement. First of all, let me thank and praise the council. Almost all of you were new to this body. You have nevertheless accomplished much in the past year. At this time last year, I spoke about empowerment, and many of you have risen to the challenge, creating initiatives, crafting laws, and forwarding key resolutions. So thank you for your service so far. I also want to thank our city attorney, who has demonstrated time and again that he works for all of us, and that he follows the rule of law, not demands of a few rulers. Finally, I want to emphasize one last thing. Journalists like to say, follow the money, when pursuing a complex story. If there's one thing I've learned this past year, it's that this principle applies to government as well. What I mean is that I'm proud that we as a city have opened up the budgeting process to the public. What happens in the Board of Estimate and Apportionment, better known to us all, the BEA, affects every one of us in Hudson. But there is more to do. We need to create a budget document that we can all read and understand. I know that our treasurer supports this idea, since the city is hindered by outdated software and an inadequate service system. It is, after all, your money we're talking about. Fiscal responsibility does not mean simple austerity. It means we need you to be able to see where every penny of your tax dollars are spent. The citizens of Hudson can contribute to our budgeting discussion only if they have all the facts at hand. In this regard, let me address the infamous BEA meeting of last November. That night, as Alderman Bujon so eloquently mentioned at our last council meeting, was a low point in our year. A despicable criminal act demeaned our civic discourse. But I'd like to point out something else. That same night was also a high point of the year. Never before have so many citizens come out for a budget meeting. Meetings in the past were held behind closed doors. The happy consequence of that night, a properly funded youth department, was often ignored in the subsequent media frenzy. So let's look now to the coming year. There's much on our plates. The possible conversion of the former John L. Edwards School to city offices, the city infrastructure projects funded by the DRI, and a whole new set of challenges to our zoning and planning procedures. I hope the council will continue to represent our citizens with the same thoughtfulness and responsibility that we have demonstrated so far. Thank you. The rules of order will remain the same as adopted last year for that two-year period, including the change that we made. Committee assignments will also remain the same as they are at present, both same committees. Has the majority leader been designated?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Said the minority.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. But I guess the majority has too, right? Yeah.
And is there a candidate? I'm sure. Okay. And should we vote on any, or just if they voted in caucus, is that good enough?
That's it.
Okay. And the minority leader?
Oh, let's do that. Yes.
The same arrangement with Eileen, or do you?
I am going to be taking the role.
Are you going to take the role? Okay.
And I thank Eileen for her.
Great, excuse me?
I thank Eileen for her great service last year.
Okay. Well, we'll catch up with you. I hope you two will, Eileen will bring you up to speed, because, as you know, it puts you on two committees. Mm-hmm. I mean, two agencies, yeah, actually, that have a lot on their plate. So I request a motion and a second to adjourn. Oh, sorry. I don't think this is organization meeting. I don't think we really have comments.
No.
So I have a motion and a second to adjourn. Rob and Duan. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Is there anyone opposed? The motion is carried. So now we go to our regular meeting. So start the meeting. Copies of draft meeting minutes for December 18th have been provided to the council members and have been posted on the city website. By the way, your individual minutes, I think you'll get, if not, I'll make sure you see it. Tracy distributed a spreadsheet of who has been naughty and who has been nice in submitting all their minutes. Did you, was that something?
That only went to you.
Okay, I will send that on to everyone and let you know, as I said, in terms of committee minute reports. I hope in the future if I could get a better phone to record all the committee so that we would always have them at least online through the auspices of WGHC, but that's for the near future. Let's see, communications. Tracy Delaney. Tracy Delaney, City Clerk, submitted a record of annual completion of training report for members of the Planning Board and Zoning Board of Appeals pursuant to Resolution Number 5 of October 17, 2017. Columbia County Board of Supervisors resolutions levying taxes and assessments required to repurpose the annual budgets and levying aggregate taxes and warrants issued. And lastly, for your late night reading, the audit report as prepared by our account secretary co-chief. Let's see. So, resolutions. First resolution is appointing commissioners of deeds. Have them all listed there. You want to have an introduction in a second. Rob? Number one. The next resolution authorizes the transfer of funds to the police department gasoline account. The second resolution. Do I have, is it, I think it's self-explanatory, unless there's any comment. Do I have an introduction and a second? Kelvin? And? Come on. The next resolution accepts a grant to the City of Hudson Fire Department from the Hudson River Bank and Trust Foundation. This is a grant that allows the Fire Department to purchase emergency communications equipment for their for the Hudson Fire Department. We agree to accept a grant valued at $12,000. Always good news. Glad to see you're happy about it. do I have an introduction in a second? Tiffany and Dewan. Another resolution accepting grant donations, in this case, the Hudson Youth Department. This is pretty phenomenal. The Hudson River Bank and Trust has awarded the Hudson Youth Department $25,000 towards a van, a much needed van. Unless there's any, yes?
Will this be an additional van or is this to replace the van?
Additional van. Any other discussion? An introduction in a second. Tiffany and Guy. This next resolution is accepting a donation to the Hudson Youth Department for
chairs.
And also three chairs for use in the office of the mayor. I guess the mayor likes to switch chairs during the day. Didn't get a prize out of it. Sorry.
Mayor's here.
Can I have an introduction and a second? Trisha and Rob.
What kind of chair do you get in May?
Excuse me?
What kind of chair do you get?
They're pretty fancy.
Thrones.
The next resolution.
I'm sorry, what was the introduction you said?
On that, it's Shersha and Rob. Let's push number six to the end since it demands more of a conversation. And go to a resolution authorizing the mayor to execute a memorandum of understanding accepting donations from the Friends of Hudson Youth to the Hudson Youth Department. This is the same as they had last year. It's just to continue the relationship with the Friends of Hudson Youth.
And this is just an annual kind of re-up
yes,
on this?
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Any other questions? And an introduction in a second. Eileen and Shosha. And another resolution accepting a donation on behalf of the fire department. It's a check from the County of Columbia in the amount of $150. And also a check in the amount of $50 from Peter Young Fine Art for the Eyes of Life Fund. Any questions? An introduction and second, please. Rob and Tiffany. Now, let's go back to that earlier one. This is a resolution introduced by three members of the Finance Committee. And they want to amend the rule of order number 5. Rob, since would you like to introduce this?
Sure. So what this first resolution says is the way the rule works now is if a resolution needs to go to committee, it gets directed at committee during the informal or the formal, I guess, depending on when a resolution occurs. So it's kind of the resolution gets directed to the committee as an exception as opposed to being placed and voted on. This just reverses it so that when a resolution comes to the informal meeting, that it automatically, standardly, would be assigned to whatever committee to kind of vet that process, give the committee the opportunity, whether it's youth or housing or finance or fire, to say, you know, to kind of review whatever that resolution is and then bring it back to the committee to answer questions and to kind of review it. It also allows that not every single resolution has to go to committee, obviously. So, like, the last two resolutions we just talked about donations, we can override this with a 3/4 vote just to accept the resolution without it going to committee. So it's just kind of saying that the exception is that we vote on not having the resolutions go to committee as opposed to having the committees, or having them go to the committee. That makes sense?
But how are you going to determine what's going to go directly and...
Well, the rule would change it so that every resolution would be assumed to hit a committee, but would it be the informal, Andy, or the formal that we would vote to say this resolution, like somebody can make a motion to say this resolution doesn't
happen?
It
could be either one.
Either one or even during the course of the month, if a council member had a resolution, they could bring it to that committee.
Before it ends, okay.
And then it would appear here having been reviewed.
As I've told you on the phone, Rob, I'm not opposed to this. I'm just not sure how it is different from what we already do.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. Because sometimes when we have a resolution, if we're like not we have questions
right,
about it, we determine which committee it should go to and take it from there and have that committee discuss it. changes or not, then come back to the council.
Right, but I don't think that happens all the time. So, like, for example, in New York Alps during this time, but like the housing document never made it to the housing committee to kind of vet and review and to, you know, dig into whatever they were going to dig into with the fact that, you know, there's the housing coordinator and everything like that. So this would kind of automatically have that flow and kind of slow it down a little bit for the more complicated resolutions to be able to hit that committee and not every single, obviously, like money coming in, we're not going to sit and say, oh, we need to review that. We're going to accept money that's coming into the city to be distributed. So it's things like that. I don't know if I need.
So who would be talking that ahead of time? Where did these resolutions go?
Well, according to this, it would be me. But that's part of the problem. I think these resolutions are already being funneled through the proper committees. I think the confusion comes with some of the BEA resolutions that the BEA functions as a committee. So it's not like you would then have to throw it back to another committee.
I've seen like numerous over the past year resolutions that have never come through like my committees. Mm-hmm. They just popped up at the informal or formal and then moved
like
over.
What, for example, just
I mean, I don't have any that like I can name offhand, but I know there was a large number from the youth department that just showed up. Like, I found out at the meeting. They never came through the committee.
No. You're sure you're not talking about transfers?
No, I'm talking about resolutions.
That's what I'm trying to clarify here, because
if that type of position council can send to the committee, I believe, if that situation come up.
I don't understand. I mean, I understand with the example with the housing, if something came up, you know, that should be, you know, and go there first before. But, you know, like, with your resolution, like, I'm trying to figure, like, if you determine where they go, this resolution would just say, okay, instead of this just going straight to informal this month, send this to youth and aging this month, and then the next month it comes before
them. Right. I mean, even with the MOU for Friends of Hudson, shouldn't that come through the committee first? Mm-hmm. It never came through the committee.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
I know. One more thinking. Eileen?
I think it could speed up the process if, let's say, if youth had brought that through the committee, then when it came here tonight, there would be no need to refer it to a committee. So it could speed things up that if in the course of a committee meeting somebody comes up with an idea and it ought to be a resolution, then at the informal or wherever it comes up, they would be able to represent it. And I think it could, maybe not always, but often, save some of the process time from bouncing back and forth.
That can give you extra work because now you have to determine which goes.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny, Kamala points out a good example. I assumed that MOU had gone through the youth committee already, and apparently it hadn't even gone through Nick. So it was kind of confusing that it came up. I mean, it was just an oversight. So yeah, I'm just trying to.
Yeah. Talk no, about I mean, and those are all examples. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody probably has
this example. Idea is good.
Right.
But we have to figure out like which one gonna go directly or which one gonna go through you now.
So, when you make these, if this goes through, which it seems like everyone wants to try, when you make these decisions of okay, this should go to this committee before the informal, will you just have a discussion with the chair or just send it straight to the chair? Like,
I would send it right to the chair. I would think so, yeah, the way it would work, sure. But, Rich, I'm sorry.
In the example of the MOU, that I would assume would go, you would present that to the committee first. And the chair of the committee would then present that to you. So it's not that it's going to Tom, he's kicking it back. It's more like people have to get their act together to present it to the committee first.
Right.
And then the committee chair is bringing it up to the formal council.
Right.
The process should be the committee is first.
Yeah. Right.
Yes.
And that's what I had assumed about that MOU, and I think correct.
But in that case, too, I mean, sometimes things get misdirected to you anyway,
right.
Like the follow-up on the end-of-year stuff. I mean, you're forwarding it on anyway.
Right.
So it's, and this is a one-year, this is just for the rules of order for this coming year, correct,
right.
Andrew?
Right. Right.
So it's a one-year to kind of try to flip the process
right.
to see if it does provide more efficiency, a little less confusion, so we don't have, we're not having six different conversations in the informal, and we all walk away with a little, with less understanding and more understanding.
Okay, there was one instance that we discussed that I think there might be some confusion about. If a resolution comes through a committee and involves, say, and then goes to the BEA, your example, I think, in one case was, I forget what it was,
it was fire.
Then you felt that that should have also gone to finance, but I don't think it really, I think that's too much. That's a third committee that...
But that did this year, so it just so happened that I sat on fire this year.
Mm-hmm.
So after the chief, after Tony and his guys brought up the fact that we were having problems with that FEMA grant, Dominic and I spoke, and I asked him if he would bat it over to the finance committee, and he did right away. So then we could start working on figuring
right.
out with
right.
the fund balance and the rules
right.
of the fund balance, like when this money's coming out, because it's unbudgeted dollars
mm-hmm.
that we have to spend, that kind of all happened within that month. I mean, it took longer to get to the end of it. And we did it with the body cams, too. We didn't get the body cams purchased yet, but that still happens. So I think if we get used to that,
yeah.
I think there is an efficiency to have, and it gives us all a little more, you know, it kind of holds our feet to the fire to make sure we get it through our committees, too, so that it's all kind of packaged and ready to vote on.
I think what I would say on that is if you have a resolution or an issue at a standing committee, what I've seen committees do in the past is they wouldn't necessarily, I would recommend, you don't necessarily send every single thing to finance. However, just like the legal committee sometimes has an issue and sends it
mm-hmm.
to the housing committee when we were talking about vacant buildings, there may be limited circumstances where that happens. But I think Tom's right, where it's the run-of-the-mill somewhat issue. Yeah, once the committee has reviewed it, they would forward it on, it would go to the BEA, and then
mm-hmm.
it would come here. Just like some other things, sometimes there may be some overlap, and we're saying, well, look, we need to get a little bit more information. I wouldn't make it a rogue rule that you send it there. Sometimes if you have that much of a rogue rule, then you were getting a month-over-month
right.
process.
Right.
But if you have the foresight to have resolutions coming to the standing committees, then by definition, you're going to have pretty significant portion of the members here having an idea about what's going on,
right.
so that when it comes, you know, you're not A, hearing it for the first time, and B, if some members are, there'll be others here who've lived with it for at least a few weeks that can bring it, you know, bring
and
it to the forefront.
I'm sorry, the BEA would still have to sign off on the ones that
sure.
BEA
right.
signs off on now, so they won't have been displaced.
Right.
But,
right, and,
you know,
and the only
other
thing, just logistically, is to keep in mind that, you know, there are certain resolutions, because I write a lot of them, that come up at the last minute,
mm-hmm.
that are opportunities for the city.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, Rob brought up a good point. I think the spirit of this rule is not to make things overly procedural,
mm-hmm.
where there's a consensus that, no, this needs to move forward. So, you know, I think the council needs to be aware of that as we start the year, just objectively, okay, there may be a resolution where we need to act on this now in order for it to process. And while 95% of our resolutions are going to go through committee, we're going to retain the right to, by a three-quarter vote, say, no, this one needs to move, let's move it. And you don't have to feel badly as committee member, as alderman, doing that, because you're recognizing that in your rule right now.
One thing we might want to discuss also is whether we think it needs a three-quarter vote. Should it be a simple majority about whether to waive it?
What would be something similar that's in place now?
Well, you require a three-quarter vote if you're going to sell real property.
Which is,
but that's a real significant thing. What you wouldn't want to have happen, right? This is the thing that you all have to weigh in determining that percentage. You know, I talked to Rob about this. You know, you have to weigh, and Tom's well, you have to weigh what if something needs to move forward and we're in a meeting and for some reason a few people aren't here. Yeah. You wouldn't want that procedural mechanism. On the flip side, if you make the percentage too low, then it kind of obviates the rule.
The two-thirds is what will be necessary for us to make this change when we vote, right? So maybe that would be...
Yeah, I think we did provide us a two-thirds.
Yeah,
you did. Two-thirds is good.
Two-thirds gives you...
Put it in and then allows us to waive it.
So, do I have a... I need a motion to change it to two-thirds.
Well, it hasn't been introduced yet.
I haven't been introduced yet, right.
So
we would want to change that and then introduce it, correct? Is that right?
Well, if you were going to present it, you could present it, you know, as amended, as provided.
Okay, so like doing this now. So the rule may be waived by a two-third vote of the members of the council.
Okay, do I have an introduction and a second? Kamal and Rob. Sure. Okay, that's it. Now, old business, new business. One thing I want to mention is that tomorrow the BDA meets to discuss the selling of 427 and any stipulations that we, the old police building, and any limitations we want to put on that sale. And as your representative, you, the council, to the BDA, if you have any ideas that you think should be included in that sale as a limitation for how we sell that building, I leave it open to you.
Is there anything particular that we've sold in the past that you think would be applicable, or like, is there something like stipulations as a...
Well, a few of them we came up with already in the last meeting on this were things such as you know, the financial history of the fire. Let me try and remember some of the other ones. To follow a certain schedule, that's actually written into the bidding. You know, they have to follow a certain schedule for development. But we could, I'll drive with you, Don. 1 second.
Rich, can you say that it's not be sold to a nonprofit so it stays on the tax roll?
We could have that as a possibility.
Also, we can also, like as we do with HCDPA with our mission, and just have a clause that if this is to be an apartment building, you know, it's four apartments, two to be affordable housing.
Well, you know, there was apparently last council a, in their, they never made out of, I don't think, the Economic Development Committee, but they had an excessive amount of stipulations. So we're trying to keep it manageable that someone will still want to buy it. But I think as a city, we can be a little more than just say we want to get the most money out of it as possible. You know, because we don't want someone warehousing that building, for example.
Right.
To just buy it and keep it, you know, do nothing with it for years.
So can we say something that has been developed within a certain amount of years?
Okay. Yeah, we'll put that in there.
Okay.
We'll make sure
that's a good idea.
Well, and the local law probably set some of those parameters already when we passed.
It does, but it only, they could just pay the fine.
Right, but I mean, in terms of, of expectancy for time and occupation, I think some of that work was done in considering the vacancy law rather than reinventing.
Anybody else on the council? First, Don.
There was the example of 504 Warren, where the stipulations were put on 2 years, had to have a certificate of occupancy. You might just want to look at that particular resolution of the contract that was associated with it.
I think we're also probably going to look at the history of whoever wants to buy it in terms of, I mean, let's say someone has a lot of warehouse buildings already in the city.
Four or five. What's now the major building down by Cascades that was sold?
Oh, the House of Rio.
Right.
The House of Rio or whatever.
Right, yeah, right, exactly. And there were penalties that went along, some substantial penalties for not achieving a certificate of occupancy within 2 years.
And it happened now?
No, and he sold, but the owner, the purchaser sold it within that
frame. Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, if they don't meet certain requirements, then what? You know, are there fees or...
No, it allows us to reject a bid.
Let's reject a bid.
This all just about the, you know, this all just gives us leeway to reject a bidder that we don't... In other words, we don't want to just be locked into saying whoever right. the highest on
max. But if you say, for instance, that someone has to have some property here and mm-hmm. we don't, mm-hmm. then what?
We're building in a huge... Like $100,000. It's not one. It's we're working on the actual language of that in terms of the time scheme to give them enough time to actually get going and to develop it.
Can we also make sure that it can't transfer ownership so that doesn't bother?
Mm-hmm. Great, because that's somebody could buy it and then just sell it to somebody. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is sort of what's happening with House of Cabrillo, because it is sitting there.
I think they must. I'm not certain whether they got a certificate of occupancy on that or not.
Right.
They did.
Yeah. But they can't transfer it to a nonprofit.
Right. Yeah, we definitely. Yeah. Okay, thanks for that. That's. Anybody else want to comment on that by any chance? It's an open meeting, by the way, if you want to attend.
What time is this?
3:00.
Here?
Yep. The council have anything else they'd like to raise?
So all the suggestions
suggestions
are going to be added?
We're going to be discussed. I don't make the decision by myself. It's a BEA, all three members. But I will definitely prefer that one of the other members is here, so that should make it a little easier. Anything you want to say, Sarah?
Yes. The schedule for the BPW meeting.
Yes.
Before briefing before, and I spoke with Tracy. There's often an overlap into when the zoning board, if they're meeting that month, when they're scheduled to start. And I had confirmed with Tracy, and I think you agree, that these are the council's chambers, and that while other organizations would want them to use it, and they do, but it comes with priorities. So I'd like to change the meeting for DPW to be 5:30 to 6:30, and the zoning board could start after that. We're starting to have more people attend, and I expect with a lot of the DRI projects next year that DPW will be involved in, that there may be even more interest, so.
Yeah, I don't think we need a motion for that. I think we should just make sure that zoning
yes.
is informed.
I tried to work that through last year when I saw that it was probably going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And the chair agreed, but two of the members did not. So we let it go, and we ended up meeting different places. But for this year, I'd like to assert that it's all changed.
I will write an email to Lisa Keneally, who's the chair, letting her know that we kind of take priority, and we're going to meet. I mean, you're going to meet from 5:30 to 6:30.
6:30. Yes.
And I will CC you as well as Tracy because she.
Thanks. Thank you.
Anything else from the council? Scott.
I'd just like to invite everybody to the first finance meeting before the formal next week. We're going to be talking about our 2019 strategic plan and projects that we're working on with regard to revenue and things that are not necessarily property taxes. So I invite everybody to attend at 5:30 on Tuesday.
Also, I'd like to... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
To announce that I'm sorry I'm a little behind on the... RFP for JLE, but this is it's a long one, and it takes, it's my first RFP, so I hope to have it soon, and that you haven't forgotten that that's definitely on our agenda to try to get this RFP out for a feasibility study. I've done a lot of research on it. For example, I was telling Eileen earlier, there's been a lot of remediation done already in that building, so there's all kinds of things, and I also want to meet with Maria to discuss, because they're kind of... really anxious to sell the building, the school board. But I've also been told that they are also concerned about being civic-minded. You know, they don't want to just sell it to anybody and let it go that way. So,
the
concern.
Yes.
What is this, the RFP, isn't it, what is the scope of this RFP? Isn't it to
determine whether it's feasible to transfer city offices to that building and what else we could, and youth center and other possibilities.
But so we're hiring, so the RFP is to hire an outside contractor to do a feasibility study.
Correct.
Right.
We already approved that.
Right. So that RFP hasn't gone out yet. Right?
Correct.
So we're still waiting, but everything that you said, isn't that part of the feasibility study? Like to figure out?
Yeah, but it helps to have more information in the RFP about what, you know, what the dimensions are and all that kind of. I mean, the standard one, I found a template in a similar situation in Michigan where a RFP went out for a conversion of a school to city offices. So I sort of followed that. Yeah, it's got a lot of. It's not just a one-page RFP like some of the ones we've seen.
All right, and that comes before us, before.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Fine.
Anything else, Rob?
One more question. Could we do we have the grant writers again this year?
We still have LaBerge for. We renewed them back in July.
That's right.
Yeah. Was it 6 years from, 6 months from that, or a year from that? 6 months, so maybe 6 months from that. Rick?
They will be coming during the next month and visiting with the Common Council and every other department head. I've gotten some feedback that, you know, they didn't return some phone calls, so please, let's be as aggressive as we possibly can with some requests. And if, in fact, you're not getting treated and you're not getting the response that you think is necessary, please let me know. Because, you know, we talked to them. We only applied for two for this last grant funding, one from my office for a parking study that I desperately wanted to have done, and Rob Perry put an application through. Rob won his three for the, I guess he attempted twice before. I did not get the parking thing. The parking thing would have been fantastic to have in relationship with the DRI implementation. But I'm going to ask them to meet with every department head and certainly with the Common Council. So anything and everything you can possibly think of, use. And if, in fact, you find they're not getting back to you, let me know.
In regards to that, the DRI committee have picked an overall project manager for the DRI, the city DRI projects. So it's a group called the Chazen Group. Chazen, and the woman who will be our contact is based in Troy. The company itself, I believe, is in Glen Falls. Tiffany.
Thank you for having the grant writers come to us next month. We would like to have a report, a monthly report, you know, whether it's communications, just so we are updated on what the grant writers are looking into, so we are well-informed. We will give suggestions to the grant writers that we may see the needs for our wards and for the city itself, but that is one of our requests.
This past year was very strange because we historically have utilized the HDC and Sheena was very involved with the grant writers. And when that kind of fell by the wayside, and the grant writers would be asked to go to the economic development meetings, committee meetings, and a couple of things that I expected to be requested never materialized, which was disappointing. But this year we're going to use them. This is an experiment. If they either going to cut it, you know, because I couldn't have been more disappointed just for the fact that the parking thing, which I thought would have been so beneficial, but I'm going to try to find another way to do it as fast as possible.
Rob?
Yeah, and so my last comment would be, after they come to our meeting next month, I assume they'll have the grid that they did last year, Rick, is that?
I don't know, I'm talking to them on the phone. I mean, if you wanted something from them, I think it was a very quick meeting last year, and it was kind of a fast meeting, and then I think there were individual meetings with you all, with them, but I'm not really quite sure. I know they were with department heads.
Yeah, if they have an idea, Phil, they have like a syllabus of the grants, because that's what they brought us last year, and then after the meeting next month, then maybe the committees then can reach out and have them come to each of the committee meetings they feel that, you know, have grants that get those committees.
And just quickly, is it clear in the contract, it's $30,000, but that's up to X amount of grant writing time, correct? And then they could build over that. So if we start besieging them with work.
Mm-hmm. Well, they will come back to us with every request and say, okay, we have these 10 requests. What do you all want to do?
It sounded like it was based on the hourly basis of like projected number of grants per hours of work. What was that number?
Are there performance guarantees with regards to response time and follow-up and stuff like that that they can get dinged upon if they're not?
Yeah, probably need a monthly report.
Right.
That's quarterly. It's about very...
Send the contract around to you to see.
Great.
I mean, understand too, there's only a few months of grant writing window that happens. You have from May until the end of July or something. That's when the CFA process is open. Right. So, I mean, and all of us can go and look at the CFA process and see what grants are available. And just to demystify this whole grant writer, I mean, any of us can write a grant. I mean, all of us have access to the CFA. And yes, I mean, the grant writers went out for two grants, but there are others among us who have gone out for grants. I mean, I went out for two grants, Dominic went out for grants, that's what I know of. NYSERDA has been great. I've been working with them. We're getting rebates for electric car chargers. We got the grant from solar panels, the radar detection. So they just fill out a form.
That's all they did. They got paid $15,000.
Right. And that's some grants are really like an extensive process.
Yeah. It's something that. We could do ourselves, number one, sometimes it's forms are very easy. And number two, it's like, right, we follow up and follow through with them as well. We can't just assume that they're going to do it for us.
I would assume that they're going to do it if we give them a request and that's what they're getting paid to do.
That's
their job.
Yeah, but I reached out because when we got that spreadsheet at the beginning of last year, the grants that were... possibly available, I reached out to see what happened with them, and I never got any response. Mm-hmm. And I never got any communication that said that we either didn't receive the grant or if they applied or anything.
I had a similar experience. I followed up on something very specific two or three times, and I never got a response.
Then they should be fired.
Yeah, I agree.
Bring the dukes back.
I agree.
Just a thought.
I agree.
Any other new business? Oh, sure, sure.
Yeah. I want to talk about that empty lot by from the 401 in State Street.
Yes.
About, like, I would like to see the, beginning of the housing processing for that empty lot.
That's... Fine, but let me explain what is going on with that right now, why we should hold off a little bit. As part of the RFP for JLE, in the RFP I'm suggesting that that could be part of the project if it's necessary for that project, because that would provide parking for the city or whatever who would need that lot. So I don't think we want to commit ourselves yet to what we're going to do with that lot. And as you know from, is it the Economic Development Committee that we're talking about, or was it Finance?
Finance.
They've been talking about that a lot already, in terms of figuring out what to do with it. But I've asked them to just wait until this RFP is done. And I know you want to do the JLE project. So I think it's important to keep that as part of that, potentially, for that bigger project right now. But it's definitely on the agenda if that falls through.
JLE has parking.
Not enough. I mean, if we put everything there,
everything was combined.
Exactly. Put everything in there, and let's say a number of daycare centers went in there. I mean, there's a lot of potential there.
And what about if it was to combine, then the parking in 401, they wouldn't have access to that? Behind that building?
I'm confused.
They have parking behind 401 State then?
Behind, yes, that's not ours. Ours is the one across the
street. I know, but if it's combined for JLE, the county would not have access to that parking lot?
Correct. They're only there by agreement right now. It's not their lot.
Okay.
And I don't think at this point we're talking about the county sharing
I think it just...
You're talking about the one behind 401.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Behind 401.
The one on Columbia Street.
It would be nice, though, if we did not necessarily consider parking all the time. I mean, the amount of parking lots that we use in Bellevue here is just ridiculous.
I would just like to say, I feel that's extremely poor land use policy, given the fact that there's already an enormous amount of surface parking in the city. Mm-hmm. Surface parking is lousy for the environment. It creates more hardscape, more runoff problems. That plot is, again, on a very visible and major corner. I think to have it turned into a parking lot would really just be sad for the city and also sad for the neighborhood. In terms of, you know, Rick wanting to pursue a parking study, I think that would be great. I think the city could benefit.
For what?
Pursuing the parking study would be great, but if there is going to be more parking, I think, you know, other options are to explore parking that's not just surface parking, where there could be some retail housing and parking either below or above, and that is more costly, certainly, but for the long-term future of the city, I think it's a much better strategy.
Thank you.
And just along those lines, I don't disagree with any of it, but when we get to trying to figure out complete streets, mm-hmm. I mean, just look at Warren Street. It scares me when there's a bike riding up Warren Street. There's cars parked on both sides. I think in order to not have too much parking available, I think we're going to have to think differently, and I don't know how yet. The delivery trucks that are double parked and getting around those, I don't know how we're going to accomplish what we want to without some big changes.
Well, in that case, I think...
What did you say?
Presumably that's what we can move toward by new comp plan and
economic development should continue thinking about that lot and our takeover of it, our taking back of it.
Finance. Yeah.
Sure, you're on the
put it on the agenda on that.
So it's not off the table as to do something with it. Let's, you know, just keep it one, keep it open at this point for what we plan on doing. I think we also have to keep in mind that the county might be a little stunned when we tell them they have no more access to it. Yes.
One last thing. I know everyone was great, satisfied when the dog officer finally came in and gave us a report. And it was requested that we would get a monthly report from the dog officer. And I remember the response was he reports to the police with his dealings with the dogs. So
Tracy. Reports to Tracy, I believe.
I'm reports to the police. We just would like a monthly request as well, whether he obtained zero dogs this month and two dogs the next month. We would just like to have that report. So if it's being sent to the police chief, we would like that copy.
Is that for the county and the city, or just for the city?
Well, he's worked for a number of... Oh. He doesn't work for the entire county. He works for a number of
municipalities. I believe the city pays him.
We're one of his clients. Anything else?
I need to be updated on two things. I'm asked periodically about finding a plumber. New people come to town. Mm-hmm. So what is the situation with plumber licenses? There was talk about changing something so that more plumbers could be licensed in the city of Hudson. Where are we?
And I don't think, I think it's up to the mayor, unfortunately he's right there.
We have two people who are waiting to come in and sign up. And once they meet, there's three members on the board. Once they meet, they will decide a new test. It's been very frustrating to get them physically to come in and sign up because they're so busy. We reissued the letters of appointment this week. We've called them all. Please come in and sign up so you can have this meeting to determine when a new test will happen for the city of Hudson to license new planners.
So who's certified now?
Certified, I have to check the list.
There's only two places that are certified.
No, there are more than that. And it's Craig Egg is over that, Craig Egg of Code Enforcement. Hopefully, once the test is administered, we can bring in more plumbers. But we have several, so we have more than two certified plumbers.
But do they work independently, or are they, with a firm, like?
With usually their own firm. One of ours just went to work full-time for the Galvin Foundation. He was a very active plumber here, and he's working independently on the weekends, so we can keep that going.
I just know that it's very frustrating for people who are trying to find plumbers, who are trying to get, so they can get work done and renovate their homes and stuff. I hear it quite a bit.
Sure. Did you say that? Two questions?
I do. The other one is on the, was there or is there a moratorium on Airbnbs? At one time there was going to be a moratorium.
I've tasked the legal committee with is the first stage, which would be a moratorium on future unowner-occupied Airbnbs. That's kind of the least we could get right away, I think.
We could do a law on a single residence. You have to prove it's a residence in New York City. We have to say you have to live there X amount of time before you can do it. So that's one thing that we could do for sure. And then we could monitor a more aggressive monitoring software.
It just seems like there are more and more and more Airbnbs, and they're unoccupied, and you're getting gaps in our streets.
Yep, absolutely.
So, how fast does this go?
We'll be on the agenda for this.
I'm sorry?
We'll be on the agenda for this month, for February.
And then it'll be, which committee again?
Legal.
And then, if presumably we could follow, I think New York has a single residency law already on the books in the city. Right? So that would be, I guess, the model, right? Andy?
Yeah, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, and it's hard.
There's one that's on the books that is... that hasn't been challenged, but they're being challenged in some hyper-aggressive way in terms of how they define the residency requirements. But
we can't go back, right?
Right, it'd be very hard.
Yeah.
If a major municipality was led the way in terms of certain kinds of restrictions, it would be easier for us to do it. For us to take the lead and try to ban something, it'd be very hard. But to have a moratorium is more feasible at this point. And that would be reasonable.
Because it was a while back that this was talked about. And I think I've lost a lot of neighbors.
I lost the house next to mine.
In the meantime.
It's empty.
It's disturbing.
Don was boundless next, actually.
Thank you, Tom. I have a sort of a longish thing I'd like to discuss with the council. And I know it's late, but I'll try to keep this brief. And it has to do with the development on State Street, with the new development opposite Bliss Towers and Bliss Towers. The reason I bring it up is that last month at the planning board, most of the time at the planning board was spent not discussing the specifics of the engineering studies or whether or not it fit the zoning and had site plan issues, but it had to do with the context in which this plan fit and who it would serve. I'm sorry, I'm Don Moore, I'm 452 East Allen, I'm speaking only as a resident right now. And I bring this up largely in context of planning, because back when the DRI was hotly discussing housing and reflected in the RFQ from the Hudson Housing Authority, was an assumption that this would be a truly mixed-use housing project. That the AMI spread within this would be from 30 to 120%. Indeed, the DRI grant, in some respects, and I'm not sure that I would represent this as hard and fast, says that the mix of housing must be 80 to 20%. The back up just so that you're clear. The project is really has two purposes. One is to rehab Bliss Towers. And I don't think anybody could have any argument with that. I certainly wouldn't. 7 or 8 years ago, we tried to get that done, and it didn't work for a lot of bureaucratic reasons primarily. But it was a project that was for the residents of Bliss Tower. In other words, no one, if there was any renovation, destruction or renovation of that project, of those housing units, the people who were resident in those units would get to return to them. They were guaranteed that they would not lose housing. That would also be the case with the renovation of Bliss now, which is the intention of the development as it is currently proposed. That unit would get skinned, has to go through engineering studies, but all the units would remain the same except they would be renovated. It would be roughly 135. When the Hudson Housing Authority issued its RFQ early in 2018, they specified that the AMI spread of 30 to 120, they specified that it would be 40 to 50 residents. And then fast forward to the issuance of an agreement with a contractor called PRC for 150 units, which is actually more units than is in Bliss Towers now. And the AMI would be no more than 80, which is to say it would only be available to Section 8 housing eligible residents. And I'm not making any sort of brief against Section 8. But there was, I think, a stab at smart growth and having a mixed-use apartment complex there with retail commercial on the first floor, and the scale that really made sense for, I think, what I think I've heard this city express in terms of what it wants in that sort of housing. The other thing about the scale issue, and no, let me, one more thing about Section 8, I'm very much in favor of having housing for Section 8, for Hudson residents and for Section 8. I have read the Hudson Housing, the Strategic Housing Action Plan. And when it discusses the need, what it discusses is a regional need. It does not discuss a city need. In other words, and the constituency for any Section 8 housing program would by necessity have to be region-wide. So at the very least, I think we should be clear that we are not discussing a program that provides housing, that guarantees housing for residents of Hudson, which was what the impetus for housing was in the main through the DRI. The third area that I wanted to mention here is the impact on the city. If you have a $55 million project is probably the single largest project that this city has undertaken. Possibly not in real dollars, and I haven't done the research on what it costs to build Bliss or the terraces or Crosswinds. But $55 million is an enormous project. And it implies city service. A project that large, 150 people, 150 units, implies additional city services. It implies health from the county, and it implies fire, and it implies social services, and all of this is being taken on by Hudson, not by anyone else, because it's located in Hudson. I have not heard anyone discuss that the county would step up and take a part of this responsibility to maintain this particular facility, because it is regional, and regional means Greene County is as well as Columbia County, and it can meet also Rensselaer and Dutchess County. One of the virtues of Section 8 is that you can, if you live in it, once you've been eligible and you've rented an apartment, you go in and you could be there for 12. If you're there for 12 months, you can take your section, those housing choice vouchers any place in the country, and I think that's really valuable because job mobility is important. We all know that. How many of us have moved because of jobs? I think the bottom line here is that this is sneaking up on the city. The developers, PRC, have no, and I don't, this is not, I'm not going to go there. They have a reputation, they're not from Hudson, and I think that there is a great impetus to try to get this done through the planning board, as if seeker, which is important, and engineering studies are all that's needed. And I think that the city needs to stand back and say, what impact does this project really have, and is it what we want? Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Don. As you know, I said a bunch of those things at the last, I don't know if you were at the last HHJ meeting, almost identical. And I know many people have the same concerns. Andy and I have been talking about how we're going to handle this from the council point of view, in terms of seeker, in terms of enlightening, or perhaps, how should we put this, Andy? Making it clear to the planning board that they also have a much wider purview in what they can discuss.
That would be very helpful.
Which is, you know, that it's kind of unclear right now. I think you were at that last planning meeting, and one member, Mark, who's here right now, brought up a lot of these concerns. So we know there are also members of the current planning board who will insist that these issues get addressed through planning as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think we'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't agree with you right now, except for some members of HHA, because that's their agenda.
And I'll give you one more thing. I don't want to fault the HHA. I mean, when they started, this was a relatively small project that was principally to renovate the Bliss and then add a little on.
Right.
And now that the add-on has taken over the project.
Right. And excuse me for quoting myself, but as I said at the HHA meeting, it does seem to be a driven by the developers.
Right.
You know, they see it just inflated out of the blue to all of us. It's just,
wasn't that decision made? Wasn't that in the Columbia paper that the developers get 60% and this is 40%?
I'm not sure.
I'm sorry.
There's the actual ownership of these.
Oh, the ownership. Yeah. Right.
Yes. Right.
But a quick point to what Don said, it's really not sneaking up on the city. I think so, very many people now are very aware of what's happening and are certainly doing a lot of having a lot of conversation about it, and nothing's going to just happen.
Except the main thing that a lot of people in the city might not be aware of is that our housing authority is already on a list now with HUD to convert everything from section to all of the Bliss being complete Section 8 housing, being away from directly HUD history program. So they applied to do that in October of 2017. So we're along the path to a complete transformation of how we've done public housing in Hudson for the last 40 plus years.
But I think even that part of it has to be approved by us.
Sure, I mean, it's still down to us. They got the goals, they got the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Here we are.
May I say to the mayor that this is exactly what I wanted to hear when I came here, was that you didn't need to say as much as you have.
Well, and I will also say, I think, you know, we spent almost a year creating a housing initiative study. It was adopted by the city of Hudson via the Common Council, and it's part of the Housing and Transportation Committee. And I would judge most everything that goes on within city of Hudson housing with that document. And that document's almost a complete contradiction to what they're talking about.
Anything else? Or?
Well, I was just making a comment that the Section 8 program is a good program. Just to clarify, we have two Section 8 programs here, and that one that you just described is one that you can have for a year when you find a place to live in the city of Hudson, and you can move anywhere within the country. The only issue is that we have a shortage of housing. So there aren't many places where people can go when they do receive their Section 8. Mm-hmm. There aren't any landlords that are accepting the Section 8, so they lose it. And they're not able to move out of the city or anything else, and they're trying to find more jobs or more sources of income to continue paying where they live. Mm-hmm. Now, you have another Section 8 that comes out of Bliss Towers that you can only live within the city of Hudson. You know, and also, there's a shortage of housing. So you lose your Section 8. Now, the problem is, you know, it sounds good because the program of Section 8 is good, and you say, we're going to turn the whole thing into Section 8. But the issue with that is,
you lose the sight of the importance of public housing. So you have people from domestic violence shelters, homeless shelters that utilize public housing. You have people right now who live in Bliss Towers who have positions such as a nurse, you know, high-paying jobs, but because the rent is so high in the city, they're not able to afford the utilities such as the lights, so they go back to public housing. So, you know, when you lose that, you know, the people are losing. So it's not like, you know, Section 8 is a great program if you can afford to pay the utilities on the side as well.
Right.
You know, so it's like, what do we do here? So, you know, do we want to get rid of public housing? I don't think we should, all in all, get rid of public housing because it does benefit the people in another way. It's not just, you know, oh, I can't afford my rent, so I'm going to live there. You know, but we have people, like I said, from domestic violence shelters that depend on public housing.
This is the priority of the federal government, to push housing authorities into these public-private arrangements. And it's a new program relatively on a federal level. And so there's a lot of questions remaining as to, is it good or is it bad? But certainly this is what the federal government wants local housing authorities to do. Whether we have to do it right now, that's the question we should be asking who to partner with.
I'd also like to say thank you, Tom. I mean, one of the things I'm aware of here is getting in late on something and not knowing what other people have done, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Motion to adjourn or more?
I'll do a call. Don't
leave without signing your resolution.
That concludes our broadcast.